Where should we start the show today? The Sports Machine with Slim and Mitty on a Tuesday? I know exactly where I'm starting it. Mitty, welcome.
Thank you.
Do not say anything to me about what happened last night on Deal or No Deal Island. I need to wait and watch this. Me and my wife, she said, let's go to sleep. She went to sleep. I stayed up, watched the basketball game. Haven't watched any of it. Don't spoil it for me.
I won't, but you're going to love it and hate it. That's all I can say.
Okay.
Can't say no more.
There we go. We can talk more about this next week. It might be the finals next week, so we might be celebrating the multi-millionaire being awarded on Tuesday's show next week, and we'll see if we can get the winner maybe on the air, especially if Imagine if Boston Rob was still around and he liked up-and-coming sports talk radio shows.
That would be pretty cool.
Yep. So when you're here, we talk sports all the time. I will let people know. Mitty is in studio, proudly wearing his Jason Tatum shirt this morning. It looks like one of the real ones, not a cheap knockoff. It has Nike symbol on it, it has GE on it.
Yeah. No Vistaprint, though.
It has zero. He's got the real thing. We're ready to kick it off tonight with Cleveland.
I would have liked to get the one with the Vistaprint logo because, you know, they print your mailers, your postcards, your business cards, things you can put on the wall. Yeah.
Put it all on there.
Not
on the jerseys, apparently. So
what about the Bruins? Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. Did you see this?
We can go everywhere. Okay, let's start right there.
Come on.
Of course I saw it. I see every second. I've been telling people for like 5 months now, this team is special. We're going to go on an incredible run. And people doubted me. We had multiple people coming on the show over the last bunch of months saying, no, this team just doesn't have it. No, they're not good enough. They're going to disappoint. Same thing. And then last night, we just go out and smash a Florida team that 23 out of 24 experts all pick Florida to win the series heading into last night's game.
That was ridiculous. And fans, I did send Jim a text about halfway through the second period saying, wow, this is a real war of attrition, to which you replied, yes, it's going to be a long battle, to which I replied, yeah? Because it looked to me like the Panthers were off to a better start, but what happened?
The beginning of the game, what happened is the Bruins have been used to playing Toronto for 7 games, and I'm no hockey expert. Thomas Polk is our hockey expert. He'll be on in segment 3 today. But what I was able to see is Florida plays a little bit of a different game than Toronto. First off, Florida's not as fast as Toronto is. I'll tell you right now, the Bruins are faster skaters than Florida. And I was able to see that even when Florida was crushing us at the beginning. But the thing is, the Bruins are used to passing the puck and clearing the zone through methods that were designed to defeat Toronto. Well, those methods aren't working against Florida. And that's we had a tough time adjusting at the very beginning. But once we did, we were getting the puck out without much problem.
Yeah, absolutely. The defense was really, really concentrating on just flipping the ball out of the zone. You know, a couple of times it looked like they were just smacking it hard, just to smack it hard, but, you know, not really going in the right direction. But it was right around the middle of the second period where everything just started looking methodical, planned out, and I don't know, Montgomery must have said something.
I don't know if it's saying something. It might be X's and O's, Mitty. But what I'm going to tell everybody here is what I've noticed during the regular season, the difference between this team and last year. Last year, we got in trouble because our defensemen would just always take the puck and clear it up the boards. Just clear it up the boards. Hopefully, it doesn't result in an icing, but you're getting it out of our zone. And what happened is Florida knew this, and Florida would just pinch down onto the boards and intercept that pass all the time. That's what happened at the beginning of the game last night. The decor for the Bruins this year is different. And Mitty, you said it when you walked in this morning. You know who I was watching? Mason Lowry. This cat now, he's not just robotically playing. Like, okay, here, our play is to put it up the boards. Get it out of here. He's turning, he's looking, he's evaluating, and he's good.
Oh, he's ridiculous. I watched that goal that he scored last night about 12 times, and I slowed it down. I paused it. That was the most beautiful goal I think I have ever seen, squeezed into an opening the size of a cupcake next to Bobrovsky's head. I mean, that could not have been better placed.
It was absolutely perfect. The calmness that this kid is playing with. He scored his first goal in the playoffs.
He didn't even put his hand up. He knew that was in the second he hit it, and he skated away.
The bigger thing for me, Mitty, is about, I think it was 5 minutes of game time earlier. If you watched behind the net, Lowry comes out with the puck one time, skates around to the side calmly, coolly collects himself, boom, whips a wrister. It goes off the post. But I said, man, that kid's in control, calm, under pressure. The traffic, he's not worried about getting hit. Yeah. This is the difference. Last year's teams, the guys were worried about getting nailed with the check and turning the puck over. This year's team, the defensemen are not as worried. They're like, okay, all right, you're going to come and hit me? No. I'm going to find somebody open.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. Let's not wait till he proves that he's a star and then sign him. Let's lock him up now for like a 8-year deal, like $5-6 million a year.
I'm buying a jersey. I'm buying a Mason Lowry jersey. Yeah. I wrote it down last night. That's my thing too. And I'm not saying this is the guy that's going to win us the Stanley Cup, because Jeremy Swayman, I mean, if you want to buy yourself a Jeremy Swayman jersey, you're probably buying yourself the jersey of the very best, most valuable player in the NHL.
He has been the best goalie in these playoffs, hands down. Hands down.
So calm and cool, collected. Like, he doesn't give up any rebounds. It's really like he turns his body into a pile of mush when the puck is coming. Right? For me, I'd be like bracing for full impact. Like, I gotta stop him. I'm all tensed up. It's like he's tense. He gets the spot and then it's just, let me just.
He's in the zone. That's what that is.
It absorbs the puck into his outfit somehow. You know, it's just crazy how he just goes soft and there's no rebounds.
It's like he discovered something that he didn't know earlier in his career and it just came to him and he said, whoa, you know what? I just figured this out. I'm not going to let anybody know. I'm done.
The starting job, Mitty. I mean, I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but I will say, like 3 years ago in the playoffs when Swayman first came on the team, I was screaming for him to come in and be playing over Rask. And I've been saying it every single time since. Now, fast forward to this year, and I will say, hey, I was all a fan of the back and forth rotation. But right now, like you said, he's discovered. You can't take the guy out. He's too good. He's rolling all the way through. And Ullmark, I hope Ullmark is going to be cool with this all the way through.
He didn't look super psyched sitting on the side watching, but you know that he knows it's for the right reason. But you can't enjoy that whole, hey, someone's better than you, so we're going to have him play instead. That's got to stink.
He's the Vezina Trophy winner from last year. He had the best regular season of all goalies in the NHL last year, so of course he wants to be out there and have his opportunity. What did you say? Because I heard something else on the radio this morning saying something about the way Ullmark was looking, maybe wasn't so happy. Did they embrace post-game? I didn't watch the goalie hug if it happened.
I saw it a couple times during the game. He was sitting in a chair in his pads, ready to go if needed, and he just had this look on his face of, oh, you're going to make me turn in my book report tomorrow, teacher? Well, tell you what, I'm not even reading the book.
I hope we're not imagining things. I hope you're not imagining things here, Mitty, because that would be the piece that could break us, because I'm telling everybody, New York Rangers are going to be tougher than Florida. The New York Rangers are legit.
Just because we're not doing the goalie rotation anymore does not mean that Ullmark should not be ready to go in and give 110%. Anytime he is needed, whenever it happens.
He's going to be needed. I'm going to tell you right now, this is the part we're going to want to remember in the future. There's going to come a game on our trip to the Stanley Cup when we're going to need Linus Ullmark to go into net and win us a game. And he just needs to stay ready for whenever that time comes.
Oh, yeah. I believe that Swayman is playing out of his mind, but there's going to be a time where he needs a rest. You can't play that high and that great for an extended period of time
unless
and not
you can
run out of steam
the
at
dudes,
some point.
The dude's from Alaska. Maybe Alaska people can, Mitty.
Well, get him a Husky.
I don't know what. I mean, something seems different about this cat. He's just so happy. It's like he's a kid. You come and see him walking into the dressing room after that Game 7 win, and it's just like a teenager, like, hey, what's up, everybody? You know, he's so thrilled. He's got the youthful exuberance.
You remember watching Kobe Bryant play basketball when he'd have his, 50, 60-point nights? It wasn't him that walked away tired. It was everybody else. So maybe Swayman has just realized he's that much better than everybody.
He's channeling his inner Anthony Edwards.
Oh,
because
I love it.
This guy.
God, he's good.
I mean, Anthony Edwards and Jeremy Swayman together, these two cats should go on tour after these playoffs are done.
Oh,
because this is like the tour for both of them to be the greatest players in the world at what they do.
I watched a montage yesterday, day before, where they compared Anthony Edwards to Michael Jordan, and then they showed little clips of dunks, shots, crossovers that both of them did, and they look identical.
Anthony Edwards is Michael Jordan with more meat and beef.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying he's better.
He's got an attitude.
Well,
I love
so did
it.
Michael Jordan.
Oh, yes,
Michael
he did.
Jordan had the same type, and that's why they're so great. Well, that's why you play defense. You know, and this is what we haven't seen thus far from the Boston Celtics over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years while we've been good is the defensive tenacity, aggressiveness to be like, I'm going to be in your face. I hope we're going to see it tonight, Mitty.
Oh, we're going to see it.
I hope we're going to talk about it with MBD when we come back from this commercial break here on the Sports Machine with Slim on WKXL Radio. You can listen to us on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, or online. You can go to nhtalkradio.com to listen live. Do that and stay right there. We'll be right back. We might laugh a little bit during this segment.
Mitty, sports is awesome.
Yeah. Just showing some Twitter stuff that I shared with people that follow me. The Sports Machine was Slim. Mitty, that video I just showed him was a bunch of individuals inflicting pain on themselves, and the video clip was pretty much titled, you know, Bruins fans and what we do to ourselves to get ready to lose a game 7. But unfortunately, or fortunately, we did not lose game 7, and we did not lose game 1 to Florida either. What do you think happens with the Celtics in game 1 tonight, Mitty?
I think tonight you're going to see the Celtics go hard and win. I know they're going to win. I think Tatum and Brown are both going to be over, you know, 25 points or more, in my opinion. And you're going to see a serious defensive battle. But what's his name? I can't.
Donovan Mitchell. I know who you're talking about.
That kid is like the Anthony Edwards of that team. I mean, he is so good. He's so smooth.
We'll see how he does. I will say he's like the little brother to Tatum and Brown for whatever reason, because I think Tatum and Brown are both actually younger than Donovan Mitchell, but I think he just kind of knows he's not as good as them, and he's going to have to recognize that and admit that this series.
He's just in a market where somebody with his level of talent is going to stand out more.
My brother Dave, you're on the line. What do you think about Donovan Mitchell and what he's going to do during this series?
I think he's going to do what Donovan Mitchell does, which is be a great isolation basketball player. He's going to get his points. He's not going to be making anybody on his team any better, and he's going to come up short in 4 or 5 games.
In Game 6 versus Orlando, Donovan Mitchell was the only player for the Cleveland Cavaliers to score in the fourth quarter of their game, which was a loss. They lost at Orlando in Game 6. And post-game, it was all, his teammates didn't help him. I would take the other side of that and say, like, you need to let your teammates shoot, dude. You shot every single time and always had the ball.
Isolation does not win championships.
Not with Donovan Mitchell as the guy you're going to isolate all the time. Dave, is that the game that you want to focus mostly on? I have some questions I wanted to ask about other NBA stuff, too, but I'll let you direct where we go.
Listen, I just think for that game tonight, I mean, it's a great day in Boston after the Bruins win. It's nice. It's a beautiful blue sky, 75, one of the nicest days of the year. Of course, the Celtics are going to cap it off with a win tonight. So that series, it's really hard for the Celtics to find a way to lose that series just because they are so much better, so much deeper than Cleveland. Cleveland, you know, great first-round series win over Orlando. Orlando just not really. They're an up-and-coming team. It's kind of the same thing. I just think the Celtics' depth is just so much. Like, we can break down some of that series if we really wanted to, but talking about other games would probably be more interesting.
The thing about the Celtics that they should have learned in the last series, and Jaylen Brown made a comment, I think, about it yesterday, saying there are no friends in the playoffs. Listen, Bam Adebayo, when Jason Tatum rose up to shoot that three after the whistle in, what was it, game 2, and Tatum come down and he landed on Adebayo's foot because Adebayo got into his space definitely, even though it was after the whistle. Like, that tells you, Tatum, this ain't time for friends. And you know who mentally recognizes this is Anthony Edwards. He can talk and be your buddy and this and that, but when it's time to play, he is coming to play with effort as if you are his most hated enemy. I would love to see Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum try to play that way tonight against Cleveland. I don't know if they need to, Dave, but it is going to tell us something about how they're going to react moving forward in other series, I believe.
Are they going to still... Oops, sorry about that. I was just going to say, are the Nuggets even still going to be here for us to worry about? Like, come on.
No. No, the Nuggets are broken. I mean, to jump back, the Celtics showed a level of maturity last round that they really haven't shown in the prior years. I mean, they've been the deeper, probably better team each of the last two postseasons when they've lost. But they've lost because of immaturity. You know, they lose that game two against Miami, and that's a series where, hey, in the past, it's going long. Maybe the Celtics win or six or seven games. But this year here, the Celtics didn't just respond. They responded with three huge wins. Even though Miami won a game in the series, the Celtics still had the best plus-minus of any of the first-round series, and there were multiple sweeps in the other conference. So the Celtics put on a dominant performance after losing. That's a level of maturity they haven't shown. I expect that to continue with this. Of course, anything can happen. But I just think the Celtics' maturity level is just grown, and that's what you're talking about with Anthony Edwards. Is he there yet at 22? Boy, if he is, the NBA, the Celtics better win this year because they might not be able to win for the next 10.
Well, that's the thing. They're not going to win at all unless they come with that attitude. And I'm seeing it from Anthony Edwards, and it scares me. The New York Knicks, we know, definitely have it too. They pull out a game 121-117 over Indiana last night. And for people that listen, I mean, this was a prime example of a game of how you can tell the NBA officiating is completely suspect. And I'm choosing my words very carefully there because I'd love to be 1,000 times more aggressive and just tell everybody the NBA officials are all completely on the take.
It was hard to watch the last 3 minutes of that game and not come to that conclusion. You know, whether those refs are Knicks fans or whether there's an agenda by the NBA to make sure that the Knicks get some calls. I mean, multiple calls all went the way of the Knicks. Somewhere you just can't explain it. You know, I mean, just phantom whistles, phantom calls. Yeah, you know, I don't really know what the right way to frame it up is. But I'll tell you, I like Indiana an awful lot in that series. If they get a fair whistle, Indiana's going to win that series.
I think they got Scott Fosteritis. That's what it is. That guy, he's on the bye.
He was not there last night, Mitty, which
tonight,
makes it even worse. Indiana, just so you know, Dave, plus 275 for the series line right now. But so everybody knows, like 3 minutes left, I wrote in my notebook, we got about a tie game. Knicks fans are standing. The Knicks fans are going crazy. I love the Knicks fans. A minute 51 left in the fourth tie game, and the refs call a foul. And, Dave, that was, if you could refresh my memory and let everybody know, that was challenged, and it got turned over. Do you remember the calls that went against the Indiana Pacers last night at the end of that game?
Yeah, you're talking about the screen on Miles Turner, right?
That's the very end of the one. There was one that was a reach earlier where Halliburton, with the minute 51, reaches in, knocks the ball away from the Knicks. It goes right to the Indiana Pacers guy, the refs, and they're going to go down and score a deuce on this at a tie game. And the refs blow the whistle, call the foul on Halliburton. He runs over immediately to his coach like, it was all ball. It was in the middle of the court. Three refs could all see there's no way you'd blow the whistle ever on that play.
It was Jalen Brunson making a move to his right, and Halliburton stuck his hand, clearly got the ball, doesn't touch any part of Jalen Brunson, they blow the whistle. And, of course, you know, it's overturned, and it goes to the Pacers. And it feels like it's over, but it's just, how does the whistle get blown? I mean, then there's another one for a kick ball that wasn't kicked that they called against the Pacers. Then there's the screen at the end that, again, the Pacers challenge, they lose. But, it was one play after the next and after the next. And none of them made any sense at all. I mean, the only conclusion you can come to is that the NBA says, hey, the Knicks have to win tonight.
With 55 seconds left, this is the next play that happens. Indiana clearly deflects a pass that was being thrown with their hand. It goes right to an Indiana player. The refs blow the whistle and say it's a kicked ball. But Indiana was not able to challenge anymore at that point. So the Knicks maintained possession when Indiana clearly obviously stole the ball, and that was a minute after the previous bad call that had been overturned. It's like the refs were just there to, I mean, it was so blatantly obvious that I can't hold back. Like, the NBA is totally fixed, dude.
Well, the funny part about that play, so the first one, the Pacers can challenge. That one, a kick ball, can't be challenged. So not only was it a terrible call, but it was a terrible call that the Pacers couldn't even challenge to have it looked at. Right, so now the officials go from making a bad call, well, we can go just look at it. Yeah, okay, we're going to have to overturn. Now they're making a call, and they're like, ah, screw you, Indiana. You can't challenge this one. So we're just going to keep the ball with the Knicks. Just terrible. That was a terrible, terrible call.
The whole thing, it just, and I could sit down and watch people go, here's how they do it. Like, the referees are fixing games, and if you don't think that's the case, it's because you don't know anything about money and basketball. The New York fan base spends a ton of cash to go to these games. The businesses in New York, they need this. It's huge for ratings for the NBA. They want series to go as long as they possibly can. If Indiana goes in and beats down New York in game one, this could be a short series. This is why me and Dave, who both know our hoops, watch the game and go, dude, Indiana's the better team.
I want to watch a game with the two of you guys. And by the way, New York City, L.A., cities like that, that's also where they want to see Jack Nicholson showing up and Mark Wahlberg. They got all those superstar actors and famous people coming in. They want those guys at the game, too.
Dave, we got 10 to 20 seconds left. It's yours.
Yeah, listen, I just think, you know, it's much better product for the NBA, much more money if the Knicks are involved playing the Celtics. But yeah, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I think Indiana's the better team, and I think that will play itself out. There's a lot of attention on that game from last night. It's going to be hard for New York to get another game fixed in this series.
You got it, Dave. The eyes will be on the refs moving forward, as they should be. Your ears should be tuned here to the Sports Machine with Slim on WKXL Radio. As we come back for segment three with Thomas Polk to talk about the Bruins' victory last night over Florida here on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back, everybody. We will do sound checks in the middle of commercials. We will do it whenever we feel like it here. The Sports Machine with Slim, we're going crazy today. Crazy because it's pandemonium, jubilation, festivus, everything you can think of that's good. The Boston Bruins encompass all of it. Thomas Polk is on the line with us this morning. And Thomas, doesn't this feel like a team of destiny? You have Brandon Carlo's wife having a baby, and boom, he comes in, he flies up there, he's walking in street clothes, 6 o'clock before the game, and he goes out and scores a goal. That's a sign of a team that got stuff going, man.
I mean, he might have to have more babies.
We'll see if him and his wife can get out of it. I don't know if we don't want to be waiting 9 months for this thing. They got to go on like an acceleration program somehow.
Obviously, when that happens, you know, becoming a father, I don't know if it's his first, second, or however many kids they have, but obviously always a great feeling, and I don't think he cared if he was tired or whatnot, came out and played an awesome game just like the rest of them.
So two people are in studio with me, Mitty and Jane, who you've spoken with before. They both love the Bruins. They both want to talk. I will say, Mitty has brought to my attention something I'd like to ask you about. Do you know that there was a car that tried to drive into Fenway Park yesterday? If you do know anything about it, I'd love to hear you tell us what you know and then have Mitty react to it.
Okay. I don't know anything about it. The only thing I know, it wasn't me.
All right. Well, I checked this story out this morning, and I just think it's hilarious. So a woman.
We're going to save it.
Oh, we're going to go after.
We're going to save it.
Got it.
With Mitty. Yeah, we're going to save that for anybody that doesn't know anything. Thomas, I am glad to hear it was not you. I would have concerns about you being my health insurance broker if, in fact, it had been you. Jane, you know what Thomas is all about. You have a question you want to ask him?
Oh my gosh, well, he's the pro here, so I don't know about question, but here's a question for you, because you were a pro, you know what this is. So do you think that Maroon is deliberately holding back when he's out there? Because this last game, he started to get a little bit feisty, but, you know, he looks awful careful for someone that's known to, you know, set fires.
No, I think he's just being smart here. I mean, the game's 5-1. What's there to go out there and cause mayhem, right? This is the time when we need him, when it's maybe a little tighter or you're down by a goal or two. You're winning 5-1. You can just smile and move along to the next game.
Why do you think they picked him up?
Oh, I think he's a great locker room presence. I mean, the guy won 3 out of the last 4 Stanley Cups, so obviously he knows a little bit about the winning culture, and, you know, they needed one of those veteran leaders added at the end, and that's what they did with him, and that's what they got with him.
So it wasn't the enforcer aspect?
Well, I think that was part of it, but I don't think, when you look at the playoffs, right, there's not much fighting going on. You want some toughness on your team. The Bruins have plenty. He just adds more than that to the game as well.
It seemed to me, Thomas, a couple times last night, and I noticed towards Game 6 and Game 7 at different points, that the players on the other team know when Pat Maroon is on the ice, and they speed up their decision-making. And I think turnovers result from that.
Oh, he's definitely a heavy hitter. Guys know what he's all about, and they know when you're in the way and you're not looking up and you're taking too much time to making a decision, he will run you over. So that's not the issue there, right? So
Going into Fenway Park. sorry, Thomas. It just came to my mind. I had to say it. This story is just unbelievable. We're going to have to hear about this. With Pat Maroon, Thomas, this guy has been brought in. It seems like he's like best buddies with Jeremy Swayman. Like the end of Game 7, them two had a first immediate embrace. He somehow ingratiated himself into the culture of the team when I thought Brad Marchand hated this guy. Like, does Pat Maroon have a reputation of being like a really dirty player? Because I'm not seeing any of that.
No, I mean, obviously people are unhappy with him over the years. I don't think he's a particular dirty player. I think you look at Marchand the same way. I mean, Marchand and him, they go at it when they play against each other. But if you want to have a guy on your team, I'd pick one of those two guys. I mean, I look at the same way you look at Tkachuk down in Florida. Nobody really likes playing against him because he goes hard every time. He's talented. He makes plays, scores goals. And he's always in your face. But having him on your team is a completely different story, right?
Always.
I noticed the Bruins, I wrote it down in my notebook last night. Like, we have our team of irritants. If you look at, like, of course, Marchand has his thing. Everybody knows this. But Charlie McAvoy, he was taking a beating at the beginning of that Toronto series. Like, they're targeting him, these other teams, because they know he's awesome. But, man, I see in some dust-ups and stuff, some hits, like, he kind of cheap shots guys a little bit. And I'm here for it. Like, he's getting nailed. He gives it right back. Trent Frederick, he's not afraid to go in and just lay somebody out a little bit. And after the whistle, he's doing this and that. All these guys are doing it. You got Justin Brazeau, who just skates around, and the other team, they know where he is too, because he is a big dude. He seems like he's 3 inches taller than everybody out there. Like, this team is legit tough.
No, they are 100%. I mean, obviously Justin Brazeau being 6'5" helps, right?
Yes.
At that point you're even tall compared to the other tall guys. But overall, yeah, we are a scrappy team, but that's always been Bruins hockey, right? When they put the team together, they are looking for that. They're never going to be a team of just skilled guys. That's just not the Bruins way. But at the end of the day, hey, your best players are playing their best hockey and they're in the scrums and they're getting down and dirty. It's going to elevate the game for the rest of the team as well.
It's all magic, Thomas, because our two biggest guys, Brazeau, we picked him up. You know, he was in the minor league team. He's 26 years old. This is his first season playing. He comes up. Look at this guy. He's scoring a goal last night, too, right? He's the physical impact.
Right.
He was on injury for 3 weeks, whatever it was, 4 weeks, and then, boom, he gets healthy. He's back in and playing. And Maroon, we traded for at the All-Star, at the trade deadline, and this dude hadn't played at all until 4 games or so left in the regular season, and now he's in there. Like, our two biggest, toughest guys, we just kind of got out of nowhere, and it's just like everything is falling into place for this team.
Yeah, and it has to. I mean, if you look at the Stanley Cup winning teams, right, they always have good acquisitions at the trade deadline. Obviously, with Brazeau, he's a little bit of an unknown book for everybody. I mean, I had no idea who he was either. Took him a little longer to get to the NHL, but obviously he belongs. I mean, a good skater, has the size, and he has terrific hands to go with him. I mean, you saw the goal yesterday. That was just a thing of beauty.
The thing I think that I'm impressed with and I'm seeing in the last game of Toronto in this game is the fact that they finally are having players that are stepping up when they need to step up. and have their contribution. I mean, all of the talk about Brazo not being able to skate his whole career, right? He was too slow. Well, he didn't look too slow last night, and he knows how to have an impact. He might be youngish. She's new for the game, young. But, I mean, he knows where he has to go to have an impact. And if you watch the players on the third line, right, or the fourth line even, are having real impact in the game when it's needed. And that is the sign of a winning team, I think.
Oh, you're 100% right there. I mean, look at who scored the goals yesterday. I mean, they're all great players. They're all doing their part. None of them are the Bruins star players. Happened the same last time we played the first game against the Leafs. It was the third and fourth line guys that scored the goals to get stuff started. And then, obviously, some of the star players started to chip in the longer the season went along. Again, Pasta had some awesome chances yesterday. Could he had a couple of goals? For sure he could have. Given this time, you know, on a 5-1 win, maybe it's not that important. He'll get back to us when we get to overtime again.
Well, we got to just pick it up and go in game two here again, like, which is going to be tomorrow night, Thomas. I would say yesterday, Maddie from the Benders podcast, big Bruins podcast in the area, he came on and said that Florida isn't as fast skating as Toronto was. And I will tell you, from watching that game, I really believe the Bruins skaters are faster than Florida. And Maddie also said that Florida doesn't have the top-end talent, a scoring talent ability that Toronto has. Yet everybody was picking Florida coming into this series. When you watched that game last night, like, I'm thinking the Bruins are the better team here. It wasn't luck that we won 5-1.
No, I don't think it was luck, but it goes back to the stuff too, right? You need the goals at the right time. Like, Florida came out to score a goal. The Bruins tied it up, a minute and 10 later, which is a huge thing, right? You're down, Florida's on the top there, and then you come right back and you stick it to them. I think if we look at the stats a little bit, Florida outshot us. The Bruins had about twice as many blocked shots as the Panthers did. So they had other scoring chances that just didn't go in. Same with takeaways and face-offs. They were better than us in those areas. So in those sense, like, hey, we got the goals when we needed them. Obviously, Mason Lawrence and then Carlos. Those were nice goals, and you get up, and then obviously Brazo in the third to kind of give you that 3-goal lead to, you know, kind of finish the game out. Obviously, Jake's goal at the end, that's just a little icing on the cake, not really necessary. But overall, we got the goals when we needed them, and they didn't. And our goalie played fantastic again.
And there was one little piece of luck, and it's one of my favorite things that you ever see in pro sports. When a game starts off and they announce that a player on the team just had a baby this morning, and then you say to yourself, he's going to score a goal tonight. I just know it. And sure enough, Brandon Carlo, new baby, big goal. Congratulations.
Thomas, great job here this morning. Commercial is up. You are welcome here. You know, every day I'd love to hear from you tomorrow. If you want to be here, you are my favorite sale. I keep saying it's sales, but it's health insurance broker in the entire world. Thank you for calling the show. The Sports Machine was Slim.
Have a good one tomorrow.
You said it, Thomas. WKXL Radio here, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com. We're coming back with that Fenway Park car story. Trust in Monty. It's been a rallying cry for me here and in social media. I did that episode profiling Jim Montgomery 3-4 months ago. Did you notice the time last night? And I wrote it down in my notebook, but I did not write down what the score was at the time. I think the Bruins were up 2-1 in the third period, and Jim Montgomery called a timeout with 14 minutes left. And it was because the Bruins were getting absolutely thrashed. They had given up 11 shots in the previous 5 minutes. So this is coming into the third period. They had given up 11 shots. The Bruins only had one shot on net at that point. And I guess it was 3-1, because as I read forward in my notebook, Brazo scored about a minute and a half after that timeout by Jim Montgomery to put the Bruins up 4-1. And I'm just telling everybody out there that's listening, it's like, that's the type of thing that happens when a team is together and they believe in their coach, dude. You're getting outshot 11-1 through the first 5 minutes. There's a timeout called. You know, you look at Denver, Jamal Murray's throwing towels at the refs. Jamal Murray's throwing a heat pack onto the floor as a sore loser. Like, that it was the time when the Bruins' pressure, it easily could have built up. You're on the road. Florida is hot as a firecracker. And the coach says, hey, guys, we need to rally the troops here, put it together, and take control, and let's win the game. And then they just go out and do it. It's nice when a team can react like that, Mitty. It sounds like there was a team inside of Fenway Park that reacted equally as well when a car tried to drive onto the field. Is that what happened?
Yes, sir. So yesterday, we'll give you the woman's name is Colleen Gibbs, 48 years old.
Allegedly?
Salem. Allegedly, her name is Colleen Gibbs, 48 years old, also allegedly from Salem, Massachusetts. Decided to go on a joyride yesterday and hit several vehicles in the Revere area. And later on in the day, she also ran from a state trooper and got away.
Oh, my goodness.
So she was on the run.
Congratulations for that one. You don't get away from a state trooper or any cop for that matter, because you can drive fast, but you can't outrun a radio. Wow. So good for you, Colleen.
And she didn't steal another car and try to do this and that. She's like, I'm just going to keep on going, baby.
She did decide that she wanted to go see last night's Red Sox game. Was there a Red Sox game last night at Fenway? No?
I have no idea.
Well, she went to it either way. She drove through Gate C. And she broke down the gate. She literally crashed down a metal, like a wrought iron gate with her car, which is being rebuilt right now by professional welders. She got in. She almost got her car out onto the field, but one of the workers at Fenway Park grabbed a forklift, cut her off. She crashed into the forklift, and then he proceeded to use the fork to lift the front end off her car 4 feet off the ground so that she couldn't get away.
Police showed up. There was no game.
No, that was the point.
I just looked. Oh, okay.
No, that was my point. Yes. She went to her own game.
Right.
But, this is how much I don't care about the Red Sox this year. I don't care at all. I didn't even know if there was a game or not, and I really don't even feel embarrassed that I didn't know.
Oh, well, be nice.
We're going to start calling her Euculus because she's going to be walking. But she got arrested. She did resist arrest. She is in custody right now, and she will be facing several felony charges.
She must have been high.
No signs of drugs.
Stop
no
it.
Signs of alcohol.
What was she doing at Fenway?
Nothing in the car to suggest anything. Right now,
what?
She is being psychologically evaluated at a local hospital.
They must have known she was coming. How could the dude with the forklift, like the car would have already been
because they have radio.
You know what I mean?
She busted down a gate. Hmm. I mean, literally, like crashed through, like you see in like a war movie where with a Trojan horse. I mean, she crashed through a gate, and then she tried to get to the next one. The guy was a very fast act, and he grabbed a forklift, got in the way, and saved the day.
Yeah, they radioed it probably.
It's a great story.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. That guy's a hero.
Yeah.
So many people are so messed up in this world. It's really something else.
Oh, God, at least she was going for something big. I mean, who gets arrested for something like that? You go to jail, people are, hey, what are you in for? I tried to drive my car over the green monster. You know, we've all done it, right?
Like, we all wanted to do it.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah.
Wowie zowie.
So we'll see how that one pans out.
Yeah, probably not good, but whatever. She'll be out, like, in this day and age.
She'll be a celebrity.
She's out on bail in, like, $500 tomorrow. Yeah. Good for her to go.
She'll be on a radio show.
She'll be doing it again, too.
We'll see her tonight at the TD Garden as the Boston Celtics take on the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, next year on Netflix, it'll be the roast of Colleen Gibbs.
I will say to people who listened to the show last week, Dakota in Braintree, who I was pleased, happy to welcome onto the airwaves, and he did a great job in a segment on Friday. I did follow his Twitter account. I know that he has predicted the Cleveland Cavaliers will win at least two games in this series, and he put his money where his mouth is with a sizable chunk of change on that wager. And I said, well, I guess I can root for the Celtics to win in six games, Dakota, because I'm not going to actively root against him because he was a good contributor to the show. But there's a part of me, Mitty and Jane, I can take both your opinions here. What's the prediction? I'm thinking the Celtics are going to win this series
five.
In four games.
I say five. Now, there's always going to be the one game, and I predict game two. Mm-hmm. Just like always, the Celtics always come out hard. Mm-hmm. They always win that first game by 20 points, 30 points, and then they come back, and they get lackadaisical. They settle down. They give up a game, and then they say, oop. Nope, never mind. We got to win.
I think they're going to win two in Boston, but I think that so? They're going. Yeah, they're going to drop one.
Dropping in Cleveland.
Drop
all right.
one in Cleveland, and then they'll clinch it.
Let's see what happens. Either way, it looks like the New York Knicks are the favored team by the NBA to try to get to the finals conference matchup. It would be incredible to watch the Celtics play New York and have the Bruins play the Rangers. It would just be absolutely nuts. So, like, there's such an opportunity and avenue there
yeah.
for social media to be Boston versus New York. There really should be accounts
it's
already
kinda crazy,
now
though.
Growing because, well, we're going to hate Boston, New York so much, right? And
well,
the Knicks
all.
Fans, imagine if the Knicks fans come into TD Garden the way that they're going
boy.
Into other stadiums. Like, that is going to be so horrible. And that's where I'm saying the Bruins and the Celtics fans, you can't let New York fans come into your stadium and rough you up, like, and you say, oh, that's not going to happen here. The Philly fans let it happen to them. The Knicks fans infiltrated their stadium and took it over to the point where your superstar, Joel Embiid, is like, yeah, that's not okay. Like, this happened. It affects the players.
Ain't happening in Boston, Jim.
I'm going to tell you, the likelihood is higher than what you think. Those New York Knicks fans are hungry, and they have money. If you can afford to live in New York, you have a lot of money.
I don't know. I think New York is last year's Celtics. They look good. I think they're still a year or two from getting to the finals. They're a little young. Brunson's a heck of a story, and he's playing out of his mind. But you know what? It's just starting to click for him, and you know he's been doing it all year. But he's not that guy yet.
He destroyed.
If we're gonna
the
say
Celtics.
Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown aren't mature enough to get to an NBA final and win, then I'll tell you right now that New York Knicks team they're really talented, but they are not ready to go to the end.
I think the Celts have it this time. I'm not one that jumps on the Celtics, especially since they seem to have this rotary way of sometimes playing games, dialing them in. It's really weird sometimes. But I have a feeling that in the playoffs, I'm not sensing that rhythm. They seem a little bit more serious, and even how they take the ball down the court, you know? They're not doing that lackadaisical stuff of, walking.
They beat the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat
without Porzingis.
They blow. And Pat Riley pointed out yesterday in an incredible feat, what I saw from Pat Riley was leadership to the nth degree. Yes, it was old man leadership because I think he's 68 years old, and most of the younger kids would be like, oh, you can't say that. For people that don't know, he totally called out Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler had, after Miami won game two, put out the meme saying, don't let us get one, right? Trolling the Celtics. Then after the series was over, he got interviewed last week and was like, oh, if I didn't get hurt, Boston would definitely be home. Like, talking trash like
and
that.
New York.
And New York, too. And he said, Pat Riley goes, well, I didn't know in his interview, I didn't know if that was Jimmy trolling or being serious, but if you're not going to be on the court, then you should keep your mouth shut.
Deservedly so.
And he said it just like that. And
ouch.
I was like, dude, that is right. Jimmy Butler needs to be put in his place. He is a guy who's always thought he's better than he is.
Oh.
He's done nothing.
You haven't won anything. Like, he's a good player. He's been tougher than the Celtics. There's no doubt about it. He's been mentally tougher than the Boston Celtics, but he hasn't won anything. And
but you know what?
You got to be mentally tough when you're a loser.
I haven't heard, though, in years past. We've played him a lot. And you know what? I don't recall once there being something that he's trolled that's been really bad. You know, I mean, him speaking out when he didn't play and saying that, that's kind of like the ego thing.
He is competitive.
But of course he is. He's most competitive in the playoffs, it seems. But, I mean, the truth is I don't recall Butler ever saying anything that made me go, oh, I don't like him.
Oh, him and Marcus Smart got into it big time, and they were like, oh, Marcus Smart doesn't want that smoke or something like that, talking about, like, Marcus Smart wasn't a real tough guy. And I remember multiple times Jimmy Butler through his career has shot his mouth off. Apparently,
really?
I shot my mouth off a little bit about Pat Riley and was incorrect. I think he's 79 years old, MBD on the quick text. So you have a 79-year-old warrior.
Doesn't
who
look
with
a day over
four organizations. His hair is pretty solid, but he still.
Oh, yeah.
Four organizations he's made, like, as good as they possibly could have been, even with the Knicks back in the day. Like, they didn't beat the Bulls and Michael Jordan, but they got darn close, and he still has his stuff all together.
It does.
I might suggest we might want that man as president with more wits than the current guy that's in the Oval Office. How about ending the show with that?
That'd be interesting. But I mean, if you're on Pat Riley's basketball team, that's Pat Riley. That might as well be Bill Belichick in football. I mean, if he's saying something negative about you, you shut your mouth.
Pay
You're
attention.
Done.
Yes.
There you go, Mitty. That's how to do it. That's how we wrap things up here. Thank you both. We are just in Festivus territory for the next
happy people right
week,
now.
2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and more. Boston Bruins, Boston Celtics. This is
high
the
five.
Place to be. WKXL Radio, The Sports Machine with Slim, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. This is NHTalkRadio.com.